In both readings, we have what would be, by our judgment, extraordinary conduct. Saul has been trying to kill David. And now he's killed in a battle up on Mount Gilboa. I think they've skipped a couple of verses, they did, yeah. David curses Mount Gilboa and says, may the dew never fall on you, may you never be fruitful again. I mean, because, and it's not just Jonathan, his closest friend, who was killed, but his archenemy. And he weeps over them both. Now, there's something there about being bigger than your likes and dislikes in a rather dramatic way, because Saul has already tried to kill this man. It's the good of the people, something we don't think about very much. That, you see, the people lost their king, and they lost his son, who was could have been the heir. Now David knows that one day he's supposed to be king. But he's not scheming and plotting and trying to get the throne. He's weeping because the people have lost their leader. And many of the sons of Israel have been killed. And that's more important than my advance to power. Again, I think I pointed out yesterday, one of the times when Saul had an army of 3,000 out looking for David, and he came into his power, he went into a cave to relieve himself, and David was and his men were in that same cave. You heard the story yesterday, you remember, and now you've got him, kill him. No, sir. I will not touch the anointed of the Lord. Cut off the end of his cloak to prove to Saul, look, I could have killed you. And the story is about, as I mentioned yesterday, tzedek, justice. You see, justice, which means to honor the truth of the relationship. This man is the king. I have no right to kill him. He honored the truth of that relationship. Whereas Saul, who is the king, his first obligation is to take care of all his subjects. To this day, in the East, that's considered the first role of a king. Hardly ever do it, but it's considered. Now, King Hussein did. He used to meet, I think it was every Thursday afternoon, held open audience the whole afternoon. Anybody could come with anything and talk to him. He's the king. So Saul is failing in justice. David is honoring justice. He will not kill the king. We have the same kind of a thing today. Righteousness, justice. The right relationship to your people is to weep over the fact that their king has been killed and that his son has been killed. Now, the tears for Jonathan were also because he was his best friend. Justice is a different kind of a thing. Now, if we apply that, and I did yesterday, but I stopped because we were getting late. See, our idea of justice is what? Everybody has their rights. And so, if I have my rights, and you have your rights, and I'm going to go after my rights, you're going to go after your rights, we need an arbiter. Already we're in competition, right? You see, no, justice is honoring the truth of the relationship. It's not my rights. The Supreme Court, many years ago, decided that in the instance of the rights of a child and the rights of the mother, the mother has the rights to kill the child. She does not. There's no such right. But did you see, it's our whole system. So you have your rights, I have rights. So what happens? We hire lawyers. And the lawyers will do whatever they can, bending the law, to win because they want to get paid. Do you see how deeply our system is corrupted? It runs on money. Where are the people who love the country, are worried about it? You know, yes, of course, the abortion. But what's driving this whole industry is money. They're in the killing babies business, and they want to make more money. So who's going to adjudicate? Some judge with some lawyers. About what? About something which is intrinsically evil to begin with. Now, do you see how blind we have become? Everything is driven by money. And the dignity, the fact that this David would weep over his murderer, attempted murderer, gives us a whole idea of what justice is. It's bigger than we are. Life doesn't start. We envisage every human being as the locus of rights. There's the place of rights. No. It's the place of responsibilities. How do I respond to you? And how do you respond to me? Now, there can still be breakdowns in the system. And it's nice to have judges. But of course, in the ancient world, the judge was the one who sat there watching, listening, still in the villages, that were not already war. And then said, Siddhakalaha, righteousness is on your side. End of story. In the old days, just before the founding of Israel as a nation, there were many Jews who lived there. And one was an old professor of mathematics at the nascent Hebrew University. And he lived going on toward the Dead Sea. Whenever any of the Bedouins had any problem, he spoke Arabic perfectly, he knew all their proverbs, he knew everything. They would go to this man. He's smart, he's balanced, he's disinterested. And he would adjudicate the case, and it would be over. Now, why am I telling you all this? Because I'm trying to help all of us see how deeply this whole world, which is involved in abortion, is corrupt and opposed to God. It engenders or is part of a way of life. I don't know if this is true, but I've heard we've got one lawyer for every seven people in Washington. Like, we all need lawyers. That's quite a commentary, isn't it, on a way of life? So what do we do about this? First, we seek the truth of every relationship ourselves. And I begin by considering myself not the dwelling place of rights. I have rights, but the dwelling place of responsibilities. And then we have a responsibility for the unborn. And so we pray, we act, we manifest, march on Washington to try to help people see the evil that we're bringing on the whole world through this. You may wonder why I'm stopping, because it's time, but why in the gospel? His own relatives thought he was out of his mind. What kind of zeal is that? What kind of zeal for the other is that? They must hear about my Father. They must know how much he loves them. They must be delivered from their sins and from their fear. That's zeal.